The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, I'm joined in studio by Geraldine Herbert, motoring editor with the Sunday Independent. Geraldine, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, we want to talk about a number of things, but first off, importing a car from somewhere in the world into this island of ours, it's an expensive business.
It is. We used to do it a huge amount, up to just before Brexit, there was up to 100,000 used imports. At one stage, and I think it was 2018, we actually had the same number of new car sales as we did imports. That's how popular it was. Then, of course, with Brexit, it became much more expensive importing from the UK. But it's interesting, Pat, because that void was kind of filled by Japan. So this year, in the first up to August, because we haven't got the September figures yet, there were 40,000 cars, roughly 40,000 imported, and half of those came from Japan.
What sort of cars are we bringing in from Japan? I see a lot of taxis, the Prius, for example, which has the Japanese lettering on the dash, so you know it's an import.
Interesting, though, if you look at the top five, and I did this before I came out, cars imported from Japan, VW Golf, VW Polos, not the kind of things you'd expect.
Okay.
Honda Fit, Toyota Prius. Yeah, the Prius, obviously a big thing,
sure.
Toyota. And then when you go down the top 10, it's predominantly Toyota.
And the reason we do it is because they drive on the left-hand side of the road and therefore there's no change when the car comes here.
Also, they tend to be very well maintained and the mileage tends to be very low. So even though it's sort of 6 to 9 years, that's the sort of age bracket that we're bringing in, they're still probably, the mileage is very low in comparison
to what
you might get.
So what we used to call bangers at 9 years of age might be pristine coming from Japan.
Well, I'd imagine they're very, very well looked after, you know, so I'd imagine then that's what. And of course, the thing about Japan is you don't go to Japan to get a car. Obviously, you do it through a specialist importer. So a lot of the hassle is taken away from you. You know, it's all dealt with by somebody else.
If you are doing it yourself, how hassly is it?
Very
is the answer.
Yeah, I would. Like, again, it's the same with the UK. Most people, I would imagine, go themselves to the UK and get a car. You can get somebody else to do it. In terms of the UK, though, obviously, since Brexit, you have two new additional charges. You have VAT now and you have customs duty. Customs duty depends on where the car originates from. So it doesn't matter that you're bringing it in from the UK. If technically it wasn't made in the UK, you could be paying up to 10%. Now, just to give you an idea, There's a breakdown on the revenue website. Now, there's loads of information on the revenue website, but there's almost too much, Pat. You could get lost very quickly. Purchase price of a car, 32,000. This is roughly, right? Say you've looked at a car and after converting from sterling, that's what you're getting. Your transport costs are 500. You have to factor that in, right? The customs value of the car then is 32,500. If you're paying customs duty at the top rate, which is 10%, you're then spending 3,250 just on customs, right?
Okay.
Now, the overall value subject to VAT is then 35,750.
Okay, and VAT at what rate?
So VAT at 23% is now 8,223. So now you've spent 3,250 on customs and 8,233 on VAT, and that's before you bring it into the country and it gets assessed for VRT.
So we're well over the 40 grand on this 32 grand car. Mm-hmm. Before you're assessed for VRT.
Yeah, now remember the VRT is assessed on what they call the open market selling price, the open selling market price. So basically that's what revenue decide you would get if you put it on the open market in Ireland today. Mm. So it's very hard to get an accurate amount on it. You can get a rough, there is a calculator online, but you won't get the exact amount because if it's very highly spec'd, they could say, do you know what, you'll get an awful lot more for it here.
And if it's in good condition, will they charge more?
Yeah, because it's the value of what, if you sold it today, you would get. That's what they base it on. And then that's based on the rate in terms of emissions. And the rates there are anything from 7% to 37%. So it's very expensive.
So you're depending on someone in the revenue whose job it is to inspect these cars, liken the cut of your jib and not screwing you into the ground. Because someone could say, I don't like this fella, I'm going to charge him top dollar for that car. I know it's a banger, but I'm going to charge.
Yeah, but I assume there is some sort of ready reckoner somewhere which says that if they have this, that
like
adds
that. Personal discretion on the part of a revenue official.
Well, you can appeal it. I don't know what the stats are in terms of how successful you would be, but if you do feel, hang on, I've been overcharged. But the problem is, once you've brought it into the country,
you're stuck with it.
I think so, yeah. I mean, you could resell it, but then you're selling it on with all those problems and does anybody want to buy it? So you do have to be really careful.
So you're better
very
off.
Much buyer beware.
You can go to dealers, though, and you end up buying a car that's, say, a UK import. Mm. They will tell you it is. Now, what about warranties and so on?
Yeah, well, I mean, the warranty should be fine. There shouldn't be a problem. Again, this is another reason, Pat, why you should always do a history check, though, because if you do a history check, it'll be able to tell you that. Again, when you're buying privately, the law is very much almost on the side of the seller rather than the buyer. So they don't have an obligation to tell you these things. But you should ask that question. Is it, has it been imported? Were all the charges paid? And all sorts of other questions like, has it been crashed? All of those things. Yeah, so just bear that in mind.
If, say, at one point in its previous life, it was serviced in a non-main dealer for that brand, and that might negate your warranty.
Yeah, it depends on the value of the car. The more expensive the car, the more expensive, the more important a service history and a decent service history is. So you need to be very careful. As I said, when it comes to Japan, there's specialist imports out there who've been doing it for a long time. The only thing was, I did talk to a few people about Japanese imports, and the only thing somebody said to me was, be careful about insurance. Just check in advance that you will be insured. The same thing about the UK, but you won't have an issue, but just make sure it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg when you bring it back.
Is so, there a difference between bringing one in from the island of Britain versus bringing one in from Northern Ireland?
Yeah, essentially Northern Ireland is still considered in terms of importing a car as part of the EU. So you're not paying VAT and you're not paying customs duty. The only thing is the Windsor framework has come in since. So they make a distinction now between cars registered before 2021 and cars registered after 2021. If they're registered before 2021, you're fine. It's treated as an EU. It's exempt from VAT and customs. If it's afterwards, you have to ensure that it didn't. Basically, what revenue are trying to ensure is that you don't sneak a car in from the UK, leave it in the north for a day or two and then bring it down, because it's technically then coming from the UK. So you just have to be careful about the origin of it there.
Okay, now more news. VW and others are pushing the EU to abandon the 2035 ban on internal combustion engines.
Yeah, basically there was to be a sort of review of this. Now, there was never any talk of it being rolled back, but a review of it. They're pushing for an earlier review. They want it now, they say, and so do the European Automobiles Manufacturers Association. Basically, this is a reaction, I suppose, to the slowing down of sales for electric cars. Also, as I mean, Pat, 10 years away is not that far now at this stage, and especially not in the lifetime of a car and in the lifetime of manufacturing and production. Mm. So for car companies, you can see that 2035 deadline is looming, you know,
To tool up a factory takes a certain amount of time, or to plan the building of a factory, whether it's for internal combustion or whether it's for battery driven cars.
Yeah, so there's the, you know, they need to know where they stand, I suppose, but they are pushing for this. Remember, Germany were the one as well that also pushed for the synthetic fuels to be an allowance made for them. Now, 50 CEOs and companies came out today and said, no, we actually want it. Anybody from Tesco, IKEA, Uber, Volvo,
they want
cars,
to go electric.
They want to go with the ban on 2035. And they don't want to change.
Just from top of the head, what is the longest range you've encountered in a car you've driven? I mean, are we up to 700k yet? You know,
600 and something, I'd say, realistically, yeah.
Because once we get up, and Toyota were promising a solid-state battery with maybe 1,000. Mm. Once you have 1,000, no worries.
Yeah.
You can get to anywhere in Ireland and back to your house to charge.
The only thing is, I mean, there's an argument about smaller batteries as well, and in terms of the cost and the cost of running them and everything else and the materials that go into them. But in order to reduce the size of batteries and have people be able to be satisfied with smaller batteries, you have to have a fantastic public charging network, though. You really do. I mean, that's the solution. You either have one or the other, you know, and you really do. And if you look at the likes of Norway, they have fantastic infrastructure.
Now, for someone who doesn't want to spend a lot on personal transport, there is good news, I suppose.
Yeah, the Citroën Ami. Okay, it's priced just under 10,000. Now, it's technically what they call a quadricycle, so it's not technically a car. Interestingly, because it's not technically a car, it hasn't been crash tested by the Euro NCAP. It doesn't have airbags and it doesn't have all of those things. And Pat, you have to see it more as a competitor of scooters and bikes and mopeds rather than a traditional car, because you can't really use it like a traditional car, in my opinion, anyway.
Top speed?
45 kilometres.
A range?
75. So I'd say, you know, you'd probably be looking at about 65 realistically. So it's funny because I said to you just before air, Citroën said to me they'll drop one out to me, and I suddenly thought, great. And then I thought, what am I going to do with it? Because I live on an 80 kilometre road and I'm not going to venture out in that car. So no, it really is ideal for 30 kilometre zones, even 50 kilometre zones for city transport. But I do think it's another alternative. It's exactly what electric cars should be, in the sense of those small little dinky things that don't take up a huge amount of space. And, you know, it can be driven by it. This is the thing. In France, it can be driven by anybody over 14. Here, it's going to be treated like a car. Same as quad bikes. You'll need tax, insurance, and it can't be driven on a learner permit. You'll have to have a full license.
Okay, a lot of
my teenagers
there,
are very disappointed. Still,
very, very interesting vehicle anyway. We'll look forward to seeing it on our roads. Geraldine Herbert, motoring editor with the Sunday Independent, thank you very much. We'll have news next.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.